everyone says to me, when you come to an obstacle, you have to find a new way to get over it. I disagree totally. You have to just find a way around it. The difference between someone who suffers from late sight loss to someone that has been blind through their youth and has managed to go to a school that helps them learn all of these visual aids, things like that, is very different. What I really want to do from a purely selfish point of view is I want to travel, I want to have adventure, and I want to tell my stories. That's what I love doing. They say that if you find something that you truly love doing, then you never have to work again. So that's where I am now. I don't want people to be in the same situation that I was, where I was lost, and for the best part of a year, I thought that this was it. I wanted to be a writer, and now I am a writer. It's really difficult, but I believe that here I find myself on this road of blindness, where there to my right is another road. Let's say the road I'm on is an elevated road. I have no way of getting over the road on the right or the left of me. One is the road of medical breakthroughs. The one is the road of technology. I'd much rather be on either of those roads and have some sort of a bionic eye that allows me to get on my scooter and smell the lovely odor from the two-stroke burning up. There's no way. There's no access point for me. There's no on-ramp that links these roads up. So here I am on the road of blindness now.
Welcome to Blind Abilities. I'm Jeff Thompson. And with me, we have Pete Lane.
Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Excellent.
That's great. Today, we have a guest from Cape Town, South Africa. An adventurer, a writer, a chef, a builder, the scooter guy.
The blind scooter guy.
His name is Christopher Venter. Welcome to Blind Abilities.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good morning, Christopher.
Hey, Pete. How are you doing?
Great.
I heard the story, I read the story, and it's got to be the most expensive Guinness beer on record. Can you tell us a little bit about the scooter guy and the Guinness beer?
Sure, yeah. Where do I start? So, only in the beginning. People often ask me, how do you travel all the way through Africa just to go and have a Guinness beer? And my answer is always the same. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Let me go to the beginning and tell you where I'm coming from. I'd worked for many years as a chef, specializing in development and training. And although it was a good career, I really wanted to write. I've always been a storyteller. I had this adventurous streak in me. So I decided that if you want to write a good book, you need to create a story, something amazing to write about. My other hobby and passion is collecting vintage Vespa scooters. So in 2013, I decided to jump on a little scooter and travel all the way from Cape Town here in South Africa to Dublin in Ireland, where they brew Guinness Stout, and have one for the first time.
Hold on here. You're talking a scooter, like a 150cc bike.
150cc, two-stroke, little 10-inch wheels, a tiny little scooter all the way through Africa. The trip is about 20,000 miles, to give you some sort of an idea.
20,000 miles?
8 months.
My goodness.
20 countries through deepest, darkest Africa and right across Europe. And of course, with the scooters having originated in Italy and that, I thought it would be a great opportunity to bounce around between all the scooter clubs, all the Vespa clubs. There's a massive passion for them there. And this would sure create a great book. So I rustled up some friends and put a trip together. It took me about 3 years to plan and coordinate. And we decided to do the ride as a publicity stunt for different children's hospitals and visit all sorts of pediatric healthcare service organizations through Africa and across Europe. At least get them a little bit of press in doing so. The excuse was to go and try Guinness for the first time at the factory in Dublin, of course.
Of course.
All of a sudden, I found myself zigzagging through Africa. And unfortunately, when I got to Tanzania, I got very ill. we'd been on the road for about 4 months at this time, 3 to 4 months, and I really couldn't get medical help there. Eventually, the only option to me was to fly home and figure out what was going wrong with me. I was dizzy and nauseous, and I just couldn't carry on. When I got back here, I spent 6 days in a local hospital, which cost me an arm and a leg, almost literally, but only figuratively. And the guys pumped me full of vitamins and all sorts of lovely things that made me feel better, and I thought I was okay. They were wrong. But I was well enough to go back and join the guys, albeit a month or so later down the line. And I ended up actually flying into Europe then and traveling south and meeting them as they got to the top of Africa and completing the trip with the team. And sampling a Guinness, which I didn't really enjoy much at all. But you'll have to wait for the to read all about that.
What a shame.
We had a great trip. It was a fantastic experience. We did a phenomenal amount of good work for all of these children's hospitals and organizations and homes and et cetera. And I got home and I had a fantastic book. But the whole time in Europe, I didn't feel quite right. I knew something was wrong. And when we got home towards the end of 2013, I'd lost quite a bit of weight and I was a bit dizzy. I wasn't feeling great. So I started to pop into the general practitioner and what's going on and everything. And this led to a few months worth of various doctors and hospitals and bouncing, you know, juggling apples. Everybody threw the hot potato from one doctor to the other, and nobody knew what was wrong with me. Ultimately, I started having a problem with my one eye. And my vision became a little blurred and everything like that. And then I went to the GP and said, look, I need to see an ophthalmologist perhaps. And she insisted, no, I just need to go to the local hospital and let them do a lumbar puncture, which is where they stick the needle into your spine and suck out some juice and tell you exactly what's wrong with you. Again, they got it wrong. Unfortunately, by the time I saw the ophthalmologist, he said, look, I suspect that this virus has attacked your retinas. And by this stage, you know, within a couple of days, I really couldn't see. And he shifted me off to the local hospital, the one that's famous for doing the first world heart transplant. It's called Groote Schuur. They also have a fantastic ophthalmology department. And there they shoved the needle through my eyes and sucked a bit of juice out and did a little test or two and said, dude, you're blind. This is it. Sorry. The virus was treated and I was okay. Unfortunately, you know, after a week in the hospital bed, I was discharged and quite weak. And here I was told that I was blind and offered very little in the line of support or any type of structure as to what I would do now.
So what's it like in Cape Town when you get blind and they send you home and said, you're going blind? What's your next step?
Well, there's very little support here. We do have a couple of organizations. At the hospital, they gave me some forms and said, look, you'll qualify now for a social welfare grant. That is, it's a little under $100 a month, which, you know, to try and live on that, even here in Cape Town, is virtually impossible. The local blind services support groups, the Cape Town Society for the Blind, is a wonderful place where they, you know, teach you how to walk around with a mobility stick, and they'll teach you some basics of working with jaws and that type of thing. But generally, if you want to learn to weave baskets and that, they're a good place. They'll help you get off your feet. They cannot help you if you want to advance yourself in the world of tech and if you want to really become something more than what you have to. I wanted to be a writer, and now I am a writer, and I write about travel and adventure. I'm just a blind travel and adventure writer, and that was, of course, highly unexpected.
Christopher, as I understand it, and as you just said quite clearly, you were extremely, extremely ill. I understand you lost, what, 30 kilos?
I lost about 30 kilos, and for 6 months, Pete, I was in a very bad state. I was pushed around in a wheelchair. I couldn't dress myself. I couldn't shower on my own. I couldn't wipe my own bum. I was pretty bad.
So your transition to blindness was compounded with your general health issues.
Absolutely. I was really ill, and you know, for 6 months, I couldn't really walk on my own. So at that stage, my folks had just come to the end of their lease on their little apartment, and we decided to let them move in with my wife and myself into our spare room to basically assist me and help me. We didn't know, you know, was I going to get better? Was I going to be okay? Or was this the way I would stay? That was almost 2 years ago now that I lost my sight.
You know, usually we have stories of people, you know, like when they were a kid and how they, you know, slowly developed their skills and stuff. In 2 years now, you just built a cottage, not only built it, contracted, supervised, hired, fired, dug ditches for the footings to move your parents out.
Well, you know, it's now, you know, a year and a half later, and I've advanced and I've become well again. And my folks are driving me nuts, so I'd like to have them out of my home. So with all due respect to them, I'm sure that we're driving them just as much. You know, two families living in a small area.
Now, you're married, right, with children yourself?
No, I have no children.
But you and your wife, your partner, right?
Yeah, luckily my wife has a normal job, so, you know, I can play and try to establish myself as a writer. My folks, my dad works. My mom is here at home. She was pretty much taking care of me and all of that. She's retired now. So we decided to first look at buying another property to you know, put them in. But affordability is, of course, an issue. So we managed to draw a little bit of money on our home loan, on our bond, our mortgage, and called in an architect, and we had some plans drawn up and had them approved by the local municipal council. And then started to get quotations from building contractors, and that's where we started to really get scared, because it's a massive expense. And ultimately, we did find someone that was going to help us, but he let us down in the early days, just as we were about to begin. And at this point, we had, you know, a couple of laborers involved. We had the foundations marked out, let's say, although not correctly. And I decided to jump in and make it happen myself.
Now, you've never been a contractor before.
Hey, I'm a chef. I can make a good right. Creme brulee or roast anything. That's what I know. But, you know, when you're forced to do, you just do.
Where'd you get the confidence to just take on this this challenge of, I know you have inspections all the way along the line. You got to get the footings in, and you just grabbed hold of this and one bite at a time, like the elephant, right?
Yeah, you look, there's a lot of frustrations. There were a lot of mistakes, a lot of do and redo through the project, but it still worked out that the total cost to me was about 50% of what it would have been if I had just brought in a contractor to manage the project. There were, you know, times our shower stall, for example, the base of the shower was built four times before it was built correctly, and you know, and to spec that it fitted the shower door and all that type of thing. There were walls that went up skew and had to come down, and you know, I can measure, I can tell, you know, I walked around and I climbed over scaffolding and, you know, through concrete and felt my way through you know, all sorts of building and rubble, and said to the guys, okay, tell me what the distance from here to here is. Tell me what this is. Put the spirit level on this wall and that, and just made do, not out of desire, but out of necessity.
Necessity.
Have to just make it happen.
I understand you had an interesting tile man.
Oh, man, I had so many different contractors that were challengers. One tile man I had was a Nigerian guy that was a preacher in his church. And, of course, he wanted to, you know, pray on me and heal me and all sorts of things like that. We had one guy build the shower, the base, and call me over to say, come and feel, and very proud of his work and everything. And then to only realize that he'd omitted to put the drain in. So where the water would go, I have absolutely no idea. It was true African style, if I can slander it that. But it's turned out really good. You know, well, everybody tells me it looks real nice, and they're all suggesting that I become the blind boulder guy. I say, no ways. This is a once-off. This is right. Something I had I want to write. I want to tell stories, and that's
now before we move on to your writing, because I'm very intrigued with what the outlook is for your writing. Are you on the coast of South Africa? Are you near the Indian Ocean? Is that where you and aren't you very close to the coast?
Well, Cape Town is on the Atlantic Ocean. With the
Atlantic, okay.
Basically, Cape Point runs down just from here. So the Pulse Bay and the Indian side is not very far, just a short distance. I live about, as the crow flies, about just over 1,000 feet from the sea.
You wrote about having to secure the roofing for hurricane-strength winds.
Yeah, we don't have hurricanes as such, but we sure have some strong winds. I've learned so much about the building industry.
Oh, yeah. It really seems like you did. I mean, that's a lot of stuff to take on, but it seems like you accept the challenge. Now, when you became blind and you started looking around at your services and all that stuff, there was a point there where you decided to check out, or someone suggested to you, an Apple device.
I had never even touched an Apple device. I was adamantly against it because I try to be a leader that creates his own ideas rather than a follower. And I believed that Apple was just a brand. It was there for, you know, the guys with it. As my blog, An Apple Mac a Day Keeps the Doctor Away, says, it was there for the guys that wore skinny jeans and Haviana slops and drank mocha chai lattes and all sorts of things with unpronounceable names. I really believed that it was nothing more than a brand, and I was against it. And friends for years have been saying, Apple stuff's really good. You know, of course, it's an unknown thing here because of the expense, because it is more expensive than Android or Windows, Chromebooks and things like that. But a guy at the Cape Town Society of the Blind who actually teaches JAWS there, he said, look, Chris, I suggest you check out Apple. You know, they have this system called VoiceOver, and it might be good for what you need. So I did a little bit of research with the assistance of my good wife, managed to email a couple of mates in the States and communicated with a couple of blind people that had, you know, become Apple addicts, let's call them, on that side of the pond. And before long, I found myself in the iStore, and I bought myself a little iPad. Got home and fiddled and managed to get myself onto YouTube and started to listen to a few tutorials, and eventually I learned the ways. And subsequent to that, I've now set myself up with an Apple Bluetooth keyboard and an iPhone and a MacBook Pro, and I've become the biggest Apple addict this side of the globe. If you want to call it that.
Actually, Christopher, a.k.a. Blind Scooter Guy, it would be more accurate to say this half of the hemisphere.
And now the iStore actually calls me when they're struggling with problems with other visually impaired people. I've become the go-to guy.
In just 2 years, here you are.
In about a year and a half, yeah. In fact, there was a competition on the local radio station where I'd just gotten going with the iPad. I'd had it for probably about a month, and the competition was an iStore competition where you could win a voucher for Apple, and you had to send them an email in detail as to how an Apple device had changed your life. So, of course, I pulled out my Bluetooth keyboard and I dropped them an email. I said, look, you know, I was trapped. I was in solitary confinement in this little bubble, and all of a sudden my world, my access to social media and that was gone. And since discovering Apple, you know, after losing my sight, I now am doing emails myself. I use Twitter and Facebook and I blog on WordPress, and I've been in communication with people all over the world. I stream radio stations and I listen to audiobooks on Audible and figure things out using TapTapC, and I really, it's been a life-changing discovery. And of course, I won the competition, won the voucher, so that went towards the next Apple device, which was my MacBook.
But you not only sit around learning how to use that stuff, you're helping others learn an Apple device.
Yeah, so as far as the iOS side of it all comes, I've been on the radio a few times locally, and a few other blind people have reached out to me, and I've now become what I call an accessibility buddy. Someone that I wish that I'd found a couple of years ago. Basically, the difference between someone who suffers from late sight loss to someone that has been blind through their youth and has managed to go to a school that helps them, you know, learn all of these visual aids and things like that. It is very different. So I have become the guy that assists, and I've got about a dozen people now who I'm teaching iOS just on a casual basis. I don't charge for the service. I really just, I don't want people to be in the same situation that I was, where I was lost. And for, you know, the best part of a year, I thought that this was it, you know.
How do you do that, Christopher? Do you do that just one-on-one? Do you visit with them, or do you gather them in a group?
I've got a little home office where I have a couple of face-to-face desks, and I really have just invited people to come along one-on-one, and I'll show them what I know. I call myself an accessibility buddy rather than a consultant or anything like that. Perhaps this will develop into something more, but at this stage, I really just want to learn more skills myself. As far as the MacBook goes, you know, that's quite different to using the basic iOS stuff. So there, I'm still learning, you know, my way around it myself. For now, there are people that I'm pointing in the right direction. So that's good.
Very good.
That's like Pete. He does an iAccess group at his library, and he has, you know, anywhere from 8 to 12, 15 people coming and doing the same thing you're doing in a different setting, but basically the same thing, just giving back, helping others.
Sure, yeah. Look, I mean, there's just no one here really. There are guys that are trying to establish an iOS training center at one of the blind support schools. It's early days for them, and I wish them every luck. I really hope that they can get this going. As I said, what I really need to see happen here is someone to teach NVDA and stuff that is more accessible to the poor people that, you know, live in poverty, that can only afford a basic Android phone and can only perhaps afford a basic Chromebook or a Windows-based laptop where NVDA is open source and, of course, free.
Well, with your writing skills, you're going to be probably writing about that pretty soon, advocating for them.
I want to advocate for all of that type of thing, and I want to be, you know, the go-to person as much as I wish that there was someone like me that I could have spoken to. But what I really want to do from a purely selfish point of view is I want to travel, I want to have adventure, and I want to tell my stories. That's what I love doing. They say that if you find something that you truly love doing, then you never have to work again. So that's where I am now. And I'm done with building. It's now me and the voiceover. That's it.
Well, we see that you have a blog, which is very entertaining, and you're quite a prolific writer. Are you still contemplating a book of sorts?
Yeah, I've got a couple of books that are busy being edited and proofwritten that at the moment, which should be available within the next few months. And I'm working on the third book, and I'm just about to dive in. I've just planted the seed on the following book, which I'll tell you about in a minute. I also have been writing for a couple of blogs that are run by blind support groups around the world, and of course my own personal blog, which you know, it's just been a way of me learning my basic writing skills and how to do everything, you know, using all these devices and toys that I've had to find myself using.
You told me something about writing. You said, I'm going to write about 20,000 words because they'll edit it down.
You know, that's exactly it. You know, you write for every 10,000 words you write, you probably end up with 2,000 to 3,000 in print at the end of the day. The editors are quite brutal. They cut out all the rubbish and they make it sound good. They make sure that everything, you know, flows in the right format and fits in with, you know, what people want to hear. So.
But it's your passion, right?
Sure, yeah. Look, I love telling stories. That's what I want to do. And I love exploring the globe, wandering, and finding out, you know, new ways of experiencing things. Of course, now it's you know, through smell and touch and taste and listening. That's how I have to see the world. That's how I have to experience, and that's how I have to explain.
Have you done any traveling since you became blind?
I'm busy with a series called Tales from the Rails, which is a look at train travel, and it's going to be the first little publication will be purely in Southern Africa. So I've looked at the accessibility of a couple of the public transport lines, specifically to rail travel. And I've gone and done whole assessments and that, and then I've done a trip on the Rovos Rail, which is the most luxurious train in the world, which runs here in Southern Africa. And those are also stories that I've published on my blog. Yeah, you know, that was great because, you know, you're all climbing on old steam trains and running around all these old cabooses from colonial days.
Oh, wow. I've always wanted to get engage in some rail travel. That sounds great to me.
It was such an interesting time, you know, because here we were on the station and of course, as the train pulled in and the steam engine blew its horn or whistle, you know, I almost fell to the ground. I got such a fright. But minutes later, climbing all over the engine and the carriage and everything, my wife was standing there clipping away with a camera and taking pictures. And of course, the staff, knowing that I was there to write for them and tell the story, were all very much worried about my safety and security. And are you okay? And you know, they were clustered around me to make sure that I didn't fall over, and they realized, hey, look, she's okay. And by the end of the trip, you know, they all came to me and said, wow, we can't believe that you're so comfortable, and what a wonderful way for the visually impaired people to see the world, because it's an experience. It was an absolute sensation.
Oh, that's great. So, writing your book, you said you had another thing you were going to talk about.
First being, of course, my great trek, which is the trip from Cape Town to Dublin. The second is a series of short stories, which is all around the world of scooters, scootering, and scooterists. You know, having been an avid addict of the Vespa scooter and a collector and an enthusiast and very involved with all the scooter clubs, not only here but internationally, you find yourself around a group of like-minded crazies that you do barbecues and parties and you do weekends away and long rides and short rides and all sorts of things. I've met some incredibly interesting, eclectic, weird, strange, funny, fantastic, wonderful characters. So this is a compilation of all these short stories, again, to be marketed specifically to the world of travelers, adventurers, and specifically scooterists. And then the Tales from the Rails is the next series that I'm busy with. And the latest project I've just announced is I will be traveling in 2018 from Paris in France to Palermo in Sicily by train. And I'll be using all the public transport running all the way along the main artery and all the little sidelines and experience in life through France, Italy, and down to Sicily. And, of course, writing about it and how it is as a blind traveler, finding your way, how accessible everything is and isn't, of course.
Do you stop along the way and stay for a while in each town or in certain locations as you go, or do you remain on the train pretty much the entire time?
That'll be a 5 to 6 week trip, so we'll be stopping off, you know, all the way. So we'll start off with a bit of time in Paris and visiting the surrounds of Paris, and we'll then run down to Toulouse and to Castres and to Albi and over to Avignon and down to Cannes and then into Italy and Via Reggio and Pisa and Florence and Rome and down the Calabri coast, and we'll visit all sorts of little villages along the way, and ultimately finish it in Catania and then Caltanissetta and finally fly back to Paris before returning home. So that'll be quite a big adventure, you know, living out of a backpack and only using public transport. And I'm going to try to use less hotel B&Bs and rather stay with host families, do some couch surfing, mm-hmm. and learn as much about the culture and experience the world that happens through the other senses. I want to eat what the local French people are eating. I want to listen to the music that they're listening to and just try to see the world in the only way that I can see.
Siri, play Italian music.
It's funny. When I cook a meal, you know, and let it be spaghetti and bolognese. Again, you might want to have a look, Jeff, at a couple of my blog posts about cooking.
Of course.
The kitchen blind. I tend to, you know, if I'm cooking a Greek meal, I put some Greek music on. If it's Italian, it's Italian music, and French music, it's nice French cafe music, and I really get into the vibe. That certainly helps me experience.
You immerse yourself in the entire experience.
Yeah.
Very cool.
A lot of people that I've met have stories, you know, from, you know, 5 to 10 years out when they succeed at stuff. And here you're a year and a half, 2 years in, and you're going across the world. You're writing, you're building, you have all these, what some people probably don't even imagine doing, but you just tackle them, you just do it. And typically, going around the block with your cane on yourselves using the sidewalk system and coming back is a heroic moment for some, which it is. I'm not taking anything away from them, but you set your sights huge.
You know, Jeff, it's not always easy. Sometimes it's really difficult, but I believe that, you know, here I find myself on this road of blindness, where there to my right is another road. Let's say the road I'm on is an elevated road. I have no way of getting over to the road on the right or the left of me. And the one is the road of medical breakthroughs, the one is the road of technology. I'd much rather be on either of those roads and have some sort of a bionic eye that allows me to get on my scooter and smell the lovely odor from the two-stroke burning up. There's no way. There's no access point for me. There's no on-ramp that links these roads up. So here I am on the road of blindness. Now I have a choice. I can either just stand there and wait to be run over or wait for nothing, or I can step forward and move. And by moving and facing this world that I'm forced to live in, perhaps down the line there'll be an access point. Perhaps there'll be a ramp that links me over to you know, a medical breakthrough where they can inject something into me and boom, I've got my sight. Perhaps there'll be future developments with technology that allows me to see. You know, I don't know, but all I know is I need to keep moving. I need to step forward. I need to face this world, and not out of desire, but out of necessity. You have to just keep putting one foot in front of the other. And as the obstacles come, you know, everyone says to me, when you come to an obstacle, you have to find a new way to get over it. I disagree totally. You have to just find a way around it.
Yeah.
So many blind people, you know, smash doors and lose friends and family. And that I've lost a lot of friends, people that don't want to face up to, you know, having a blind mate and all the challenges, people that don't want to, you know, admit that they were too ashamed to be there for me through the trauma that I had to face. But I'm good. I've got a good support system. I've got a wonderful, wonderful, gorgeous young wife. And life is good. What more could I want? I'm doing exactly what I have to do, what I want to do, what I always desired to do. I'm writing. I'm telling stories. Now it's a case of putting one foot in the road in front of the other and moving, taking one bite at the elephant at a time, and soon it'll be finished.
Christopher, you were a chef before you became blind. Talk about the transition to regain your skills in the kitchen.
Yeah, Pete, I worked as a development and training chef, so I traveled all over the world. I spent quite a bit of time working in the Caribbean and in remote destinations, in fact, where I'd go and assess businesses and I'd teach and I'd help develop new kitchens and train staff and set up supply chains and all of that type of thing. Ultimately, I ended up here in South Africa with some restaurants of my own. And I loved the game. It was a great career, but I always wanted something else. Of course, with the, you know, advent of the adventure and the writer and then the blindness coming along, that took a bit of a back burner. And recently, I just decided, look, you know, I need to get in the kitchen again. I miss cooking, and I want to cook. I want to cook for my friends and my wife and everything. So I found myself finding new ways to deal with all the devices and that. And before long, I realized that in all probability, as I was lecturing at a culinary school and talking to the group, I was cutting the onion without looking at it anyway. So what's the difference? You just have to try. There's a world of devices that help blind people in the kitchen, measuring devices that beep and tell you when things are full and when you've got certain measurements, and special microwaves and special stoves that don't burn your fingers, you know, when you touch them in certain ways. It's really just a case of changing how you do things. And I'll give you a simple example. My cutting board now has a border. It has a frame around it so that what I chop doesn't go flying on the floor. Little silly things like that can make everything a little bit more accessible.
I was intrigued, I believe, when you said that you really choose not to use a lot of those special devices and the beeping device when to tell you when the liquid is reaching the rim of the cup and things like that.
You know, for a few reasons. Firstly, because they're just not available to me here. So, to actually get them over, by the time that I got them here, I figured out how to just hold my finger in the around the rim of the glass and feel the drink when it comes up towards it, when it gets to a centimeter or half an inch or so from the top, and then stop. As far as spices and that go, I know the guys mark either with little braille labels, what the spices are. They also use little electronic devices where they can just scan them and it tells them what they're on. I use my nose. Luckily, I'd spent so many years working in kitchens, and I know my way around, so I managed to work without these little trinkets, gizmos.
I've always said, and people probably heard this many times, experience is the best teacher.
Sure.
You're kind of like my wife. I'll sit there and fiddle with the braille on top for a second. I'll grab it. It's upside down. She'll go, give it here. And she'll just put her nose up to it. And she'll go, that's time. boom.
It makes me think of the story of the NASA, your space agency, how they spent years developing this special pen that works without being affected by a gravity field, and how it pushes the ink down and everything so the astronauts could use it in orbit. And the Russians just used a pencil.
There's more than one way to skin a cat, isn't there?
Christopher, you've said a couple of times here that you learned by necessity. You've adapted. You've transitioned yourself to blindness by necessity. I don't believe you're giving yourself enough credit. Your story is inspirational. Your drive is phenomenal. Your forward movement is not just a defensive mechanism. I'm inspired by you, I must say.
Thank you very much, Pete. It's not always easy, and I assure you that there are challenges that leave me stumped. My mobility, for example, is something where other blind people, when I meet them and they're bouncing around and moving through crowds and things like that, I'm humbled. I sit back and go, wow, how do they do that? I still struggle to eat. The food still goes flying all over the floor, and I find myself choosing specific things on the menu that are not going to leave me feeling like a fool. And there are challenges that I still have to overcome.
Well, you're climbing through the trusses of your construction site. You're climbing over the rafters.
Right.
Sure, yeah. Well, again, somebody had to do it.
So you have a very entertaining and educational blog. Tell us how our listeners might get to that blog and read your stuff.
Sure, yeah. Well, I write under the alias of Blind Scooter Guy. And if anybody Googles that, they'll find access to any of my social media. I have the website blindscooterguy.com, which links back to my Facebook page. Of course, Facebook, Blind Scooter Guy. And then on WordPress, they can just search Blind Scooter Guy. Otherwise, they're welcome to connect with me on Twitter at Blind Scooter Guy.
Well, that's easy enough.
Sure. I hope so.
And once again, what are the books that we can expect in the near future, and what's the titles, and where do you expect we'll be able to see those?
Well, the trip book, we're still undecided on the title, but it's going to be something along the lines of Scooters, Safaris, Shamrocks, and Sight Loss, I'm thinking. The compilation of short stories will be Scooters, Scooterists, and Scootering Tales. Those will be available to purchase on Amazon, hopefully within the next few months. There'll be details on my Twitter and Facebook page. So if anyone's interested, they can follow either of those. Take a look on WordPress. And as I'm writing little things, I'm putting snippets and little teasers on there.
What words of advice would you give someone that's newly blind or that is just starting to take, you know, accepting their blindness? What words of advice would you give them?
Sure, that's a tough one. Decide on what you want to do, prioritize on what's important, and just focus on that, and just take one bite at a time. Just take one step forward, because as much as I hate to admit it, when people were telling me that it'll get easier, every day will progress, and you'll find yourself, you know, facing new challenges without them being challenges as such, I too found it real hard to believe. Don't just stand still. Don't just feel trapped and close yourself in. Rather, step forward. Even if it's little steps, just keep moving.
What's really neat is when you say those words and listening to what you just told us, you're living that. You're actually doing it. That's really cool.
One giant leap at a time.
There you go. Is there anything else you would like to tell our listeners?
No, just enjoy life, roam the globe, travel, adventure, discover, and find new ways to enjoy your world.
Well, I'd like to say, listeners, check out the Blind Scooter Guy, his WordPress, his blog. It's really good. It's entertaining. And once you start reading it, you just want to go to the next one and the next one.
I agree.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much. Very kind words.
Well, Christopher, thank you very much for coming on to Blind Abilities. Your story is sensational, as Pete has said. Is there anything else, Pete?
No, just to reiterate again, you're an inspiration. Your story is phenomenal. And again, your blog is so entertaining. It's humorous. It's well written. It's an easy read. So I strongly recommend, as you hear this, to just check out blindscooterguy.com and set aside 30, 45, 60 minutes and be prepared for thorough enjoyment.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Take it easy, man. Ciao.
You too.
Bye-bye.
When we share
what we see through
each other's eyes, we can then begin to bridge the gap between the limited expectations and the realities of blind abilities.
For more podcasts with a blindness perspective, check us out on the web at www.blindabilities.com, on Twitter at blindabilities, download our app from the App Store, Blind Abilities, that's two words, or send us an email at info@blindabilities.com. Thanks for listening.